On the record. On News Talk.
With Pinergy. Supplying energy with insight to forward-thinking Irish businesses.
Now, we obviously have been talking an awful lot about the challenges for the health service, and of course the threat to the health sector is part of the reason why new restrictions have to be contemplated by government, because they don't want hospitals and the health system in general to be completely overrun by new COVID-19 infections. But what exactly is the system going to do if those circumstances arise? Well, we're joined on the line now by the HSE's Chief Operations Officer, Anne O'Connor. Anne, thanks very much for taking our call and good afternoon to you.
Hi, Gavin.
What are the short-term challenges that hospital capacity is going to face in the coming weeks as a result of the surge in COVID-19?
I think, Gavin, there's a number of challenges, really, and I suppose important to say that the challenges won't just be in the hospital system, it'll be across our whole health system, because many people receive care outside of hospitals, and that's equally as busy, if not busier at times now. But just specifically in relation to hospitals, we know that our attendances are, you know, close to where they were last year. And this time of year, regardless of any, pandemic, we would be starting to prepare for what would be the busiest time of the year across our health system. And we can see that now in terms of the activity that's going on. But I think from our perspective, this year has become complicated, obviously, by COVID, because we have, I suppose, an increasing number of people in our hospitals who are COVID positive. But also, we have started a lot of activity that we had paused during those, I suppose, critical months from March to June and July. And I think that from our perspective, it's really important that we continue a level of activity for people who have serious health concerns and who are awaiting appointments. And we know, you know, that many people, I'm sure many of your listeners, would have had appointments cancelled, and they might be appointments that they were waiting for a long time already. So what we don't want is to go back out to people and cancel them again. But inevitably, we have a fixed capacity in our health system. And even with, you know, the very welcome announcements around winter and the funding that we have for the rest of this year and next year, we still have to scale up. We still have to be able to look after people who are sick for all sorts of reasons and also be able to respond to those who are COVID positive and who have a very high level of need in our critical care unit.
On the topic of people who don't want to get another letter about cancellations and the likes, obviously that was the primary hallmark of March and April and May, was that hospitals didn't do anything elective at all, basically to try and reserve as much capacity as possible. If there is another shortage, is that the sort of thing that will have to be considered again? Will there inevitably be some other services that have to be discontinued? And is there a kind of a hierarchy of what's the first to go?
Absolutely. I mean, I think what we saw the last time was that we tried, and we've continued, I suppose, throughout the pandemic to try and provide care to people who need it the most. So people who have very serious illnesses relating to cancer or different types of cardiac illnesses. And unfortunately, many of our outpatient clinics were cancelled. So really what we had to do in those months was to cancel and reduce the number of people coming to our hospital. Now, interestingly, we know a lot of people didn't come also by choice. So we know from our emergency departments that the activity dropped to, I suppose, a worryingly low level. And equally, we know that when we offered appointments to people, they didn't turn up. So people were very worried. They were very concerned about what might happen if they presented to hospital. So we saw that, you know, through all of those different circumstances, the numbers reduced. And we saw, particularly in relation to outpatients, you know, the numbers of people waiting for outpatients has continued to grow. Mm.
But in terms of inpatient procedures and the likes, is there any plan or any kind of a hierarchy of what might be the first to be cut if you need to make sure that beds are kept available for COVID?
That will always happen for us in terms of a busy period. So we would do that in winter anyway. And for people who follow our winter activities around January, they'll know that we scale back on all elective procedures. Now, in reality, in terms of the hierarchy of that, that's a clinical decision. And the clinical directors, side by side, will review who's due to come in. So, for example, if we could see that the numbers in a particular site were becoming a problem in terms of congestion in our emergency departments, or not being able to respond, for example, to people with COVID, the clinicians on site would decide what activity should proceed. And usually we would proceed with the really critical surgeries. Now, where we would have a problem in relation to COVID this year is that to do those very serious surgeries, for example, you need to have access to critical care beds. And if we have critical care beds full of people with COVID, it's very difficult then to bring in those very high-end surgeries. And that is where we worked throughout the last number of months with the private hospitals, for example. So they did a lot of that activity and worked with us in terms of a lot of the elective procedures that were in effect decanted from the public hospitals out.
Do we know whether we can rely on the private hospitals to do that again? Because we see in the front page of the Business Post today that there are, you know, the private hospitals have some concern around the terms of any agreement, but that they may be loath to hand over ICU capacity again. And that could mean then that you would have far fewer private ICU beds at your disposal for a second wave than you even had for the first.
Yeah, so we've been working very closely with the private hospitals, and just to acknowledge all that they did during the last 6 months with us, there have been three different, I suppose, strands to the work that we're doing with them. So one of the strands related to just a bridging arrangement in terms of hospitals being able to continue the work that they had started doing during those critical few months, so bringing us up to the end of October. The next stage then was for us to run a procurement process in terms of having a framework to be able to access procedures and also diagnostics, and that is now concluded. So we have that framework in place, and the private hospitals or the local hospital groups will be running mini competitions in procurement language to be able to access services. So the private hospitals are now on a framework, those that wanted to be on it, and we will work with them in terms of the provision of services. I think the third strand is the one that continues to be under discussion, which relates to, I suppose, in the event of a very significant surge and a need to be able to access capacity, how much of their capacity can we access? And I think we're all very keen that we would come to some agreement on that. And many of the hospitals...
Sorry to interrupt you on, but that's obviously the crucial bit, because what we had first time around was that when there were no elective surgeries being done, part of the ICU capacity or the critical care capacity that was there first time around was actually just beds that were in operating theatres or some of the recovery beds that would usually be used for someone after a surgery. And clearly, you know, you're not going to have that capacity this time around, because if you're fairly wedded to trying not to cut back on any critical surgeries, that's fewer beds than you'd had already.
Yeah, you know, I mean, again, just to put this into, I suppose, a health warning on this, if it gets to the point where we have a very significant surge, that will happen. We will be cancelling things. And I think that's why it's very important for people to understand that this is still something that we can change. And we can certainly protect that capacity by reducing the numbers in terms of, I suppose, that very worrying increase in community transmission and then the resulting number of people who require hospital admission. So this isn't, I suppose, this should still have hope attached to it in terms of our capacity to be able to turn this around. And I think for us, you know, we will have to make those decisions over the coming months. There's no doubt about it. When you look at the number of people in hospital today, or as of last night, you know, we had 262. Now, that's up from, I think it was 214 on Wednesday, and then 155 the Wednesday before that. So it's the rate of growth we'd be worried about. And we will make decisions. And already we know in some sites, for example, where they have challenges, not just COVID-related, so where they have other infections or where they're closed, have to close beds for other reasons, they are making those decisions. And it's some, you know, that's part of what we do all the time. But I guess from our perspective, in relation to private hospitals, we will work closely with them. And certainly we don't have an indication that they won't all work with us on this at all. We are continuing to talk to them. They're all talking individually as hospitals with us. And I think it's very important that we continue that engagement. What we also know is our learning from the first 6 months is that people stopped turning up. So if things become very serious in the country, or if people start to become very concerned, they will choose often to not attend. And I suppose our worry is we need to filter that to make sure that the people who really need services, A, that they are assured enough to turn up. And certainly, just to stress that here, you know, hospitals are safe places for people to attend, and we want you to attend if you have an appointment. But secondly, that then we're able to respond in the event of a very significant surge by working with private hospitals. And we have many examples, Gavin, around the country where private hospitals have worked really closely with the local public hospitals. And we have done fantastic work in terms of transferring work between public and private. And I would see that continuing in many areas.
Before I let you go, we found out in the budget this week that there was to be 2,400 new hospital and community care beds provided for next year as part of the HSE's extra funding, or the extra funding in the health sector. There's an estimate that you'd need about 4,500 extra nurses to try and staff those beds if they were to be operational at all. But there's already a shortfall of 1,500, and we're only producing about 1,500 graduates, many of whom, as we know, for different reasons, choose to work abroad or to work in the private sector and not in the public one. Are you at all confident that you're going to have the personnel to be able to staff the new beds that the government is trying to give you?
Well, we're certainly working on a number of strands to be able to do that. I think, you know, first off, we had our winter plan approved, which was really welcome. And that sets out about 12,000 additional staff that we need across all grades, not just nursing. But within it, we have over 2,000 nurses, so 2,300. I actually met with all the unions on Friday afternoon just to look at, I suppose, and to brief them on where we're at in relation to the winter plan. And clearly it's a very ambitious target. So for us, in terms of between now and the end of the year, we're looking to employ just under 5,000 people. Now, I should say that's in the context of us already having employed about 5,000 people this year. But then next year, in terms of the first quarter, we're looking at a further 7,000. So we are working with everybody in terms of looking at all of the people who are, for example, we have a lot of panels already in the HSE, so we're looking to see who's sitting on those panels, who still wants a job. We're looking at, I suppose, a level of fast-tracked recruitment, and we're working with a number of different providers on that. We're also, I suppose, in discussion in terms of the third-level institutes, and I know that one of the concerns around nursing in particular would be the number of graduates that are produced every year, certainly in terms of the demand that we have. So am I confident? I'm certainly very optimistic that we can do a very significant piece of work on this in terms of getting people employed. Whether we will achieve the 12,000 between now and the end of quarter one, it's very ambitious, and there's no point in saying otherwise, but I suppose we have been talking to the unions now in terms of just how we might do that together. And I think from our perspective, we are looking at a number of things where we have tried and tested, results before, for example, in terms of international recruitment, working with countries, and I suppose in a very, I'm going to say, a socially conscious way. So we're not looking to take a lot of people in from countries that can't give them to us or shouldn't give them to us. We're looking at countries that actually provide for people to work abroad, so people that, I suppose, in effect train more numbers than they need themselves. And we're also looking at, I suppose, the roles that our nurses have. So, we know now that over 14,000 of our nurses have taken up enhanced nurse contracts, which allows for greater flexibility in terms of working at the higher end between acute and community. So it's really about more than just recruitment is important. It's also about what they do when they are employed with us and how we can work in a way that, I suppose, is different to be able to face this. Like, what is a very challenging set of circumstances for us all.
Certainly is challenging. Anne O'Connor, Chief Operations Officer of the HSE, thank you very much for joining us on the record this lunchtime.